John Busby with the Culture Buzz, and I am excited as a kid at Christmas because when it comes to the world of books, Christmas can be every day. The reason I'm excited is because a guest is returning to the Culture Buzz. Eric Larson is back with us. And for those of you who followed the Culture Buzz over the many years, you'll remember some great interviews we've had about some of his books in the past. The Devil in the White City, In the Garden of Beasts, and Dead Wake were the three that I had the honor of interviewing Eric about, and he has come out with a brilliant new book. It's called The Splendid and the Vice. And I am just drawn to this book. Part of it is because, Eric, I think that I had my mom's three brothers, my three uncles, all served in World War II. And then on my dad's side of the family, I had a grandfather who was a general who served in the European front. And so there's kind of a special kindred connection to that time in history. What you have done, I think, is just brilliant because your book, The Splendid and the Vile, is based on Churchill. And people don't say, oh gosh, there's been so much written about Churchill. You took a very special approach with this concept, and I love how you conceptualize your books because they're just anchored by fact. I mean, they're by first person quotes and everything else. It's brilliant. So give us kind of the lead in. What was that spark that said, you know, this could be a really fantastic book? Sure. And just give us the background, please, Eric.
Sure. Well, you know, I have to say, as odd as it may seem, that even though the central character in the book is Winston Churchill, it was not Churchill who drew me to this period or to this story. I'm very much a story driven person, and Churchill just happened to be the character I chose to tell it. And the way that came about is actually that my wife and I had lived with our kids in Seattle for quite a few years, and we decided after the kids flew the coop, as they do, that we would move to Manhattan, where I'd always wanted to live. And so when we moved to Manhattan, I had a kind of an epiphany, actually, about believe it or not, 9/11. Now, we moved to Manhattan 5 years ago, but you know, It suddenly occurred to me, or suddenly realized, that the experience of New Yorkers of 9/11 was radically different than what we'd experienced in Seattle, even though we had watched that whole horrific thing unfold in real time on CNN. But when I got to New York, I realized in a very vivid way how much more extreme the experience of New Yorkers was, because not only did they see ambulances and see the smoke and so forth, but there was also that sense of violation of their home city. And I started thinking about the Blitz, about the German air campaign against Britain and London, and I, from the context of, you know, how on earth did they endure that? I mean, we had 9/11, that was one horrific day. At the most intense part of the Blitz, it was 57 consecutive nights of bombing, or if you will, 57 consecutive 9/11s. And so I started thinking, well, how does anybody endure that? And I started thinking maybe I could do a book about the typical London family, how they actually would go about surviving that. And I thought, wait a minute, why not do the quintessential London family, Churchill, his family, his close advisors, and just try to capture a sense of how they got through the day, how they managed to cope with this horrific situation. And believe it or not, nobody had done that before, and so that's what kind of powered me through. But boy, I was intimidated every day by how much other work had been done on Churchill. I don't think I appreciated it until I started this book.
Well, you mention Martin Gilbert's 8-volume collection, and you refer people to that if they really want the overview. Yeah. But I love how you close your introduction to your book. If some of what follows challenges what you have come to believe about Churchill and this era, may I just say that history is a lovely abode full of surprises.
You're probably going to ask me what was surprising.
No, well, I don't want to be so, you know, direct, but, you know, I'm sure that in the research process, there were several kind of, because you have an interesting way of picking something up and kind of looking at it from a lot of different angles. So you would have discovered some things that other people, that aren't the obvious things.
Yeah. Well, you know, I tell you, I think what surprised me the most, actually, there were a lot of, I mean, if I went page by page, I could probably pick out a hundred of these little things that were at least amazing to me. But one of the things that surprised me was just the fact that Churchill was really a pretty fun guy to be around. He had a great sense of humor. He liked to sing. He liked, his favorite song was "Run Rabbit Run." He loved to sing along with the Wizard of Oz soundtrack, the songs. He loved Gilbert and Sullivan. He liked to dance to Gilbert and Sullivan. So that to me was a real eye opener. I just had no idea he was really that much fun, and that gave me a real sense actually of how he at least was. You know, how he managed to get through the day, partly by the fact that, you know, he didn't let himself spiral down into perpetual gloom. But another thing that surprised me was this organization that I cite fairly often in the book, called Mass Observation. Mass Observation was a social sciences organization, a research entity that got started well before the war. It was founded to try to get a sense of what ordinary British life was like. And this organization, again, it's called Mass Observation, recruited hundreds of diarists to submit diaries about their lives. You know, daily diaries of their, just the mundane things that they did, and the mundane things in their homes and so forth. Then along comes the war, and many of these people decided to continue keeping those diaries. And I think, and that's what, to me, was just this almost revelatory thing, because suddenly I had this window onto day-to-day life in Britain during the war. You know, these diaries ceased to be about mundane things and became about life and death. Life and death encounters on a daily basis. So that was a really tremendous thing.
Wow. Eric Larson is my guest, and we are chatting about his newest book, The Splendid and the Vice. It's about a very incredible time period at the early stages of the war. Actually, it was before America officially was part of the war, but America was helping in its own way during this time. But Britain, the United Kingdom, England was standing really kind of as the defiant entity there as the Nazi forces are rolling across Europe, weren't they?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I mean, the British do like to think of this period as when they stood alone. Now, that takes a little qualification there. I mean, the British Empire stood alone against the Nazi threat, but Britain within its empire, you know, there was Australia, New Zealand, India, and so forth. But yes, for all intents and purposes, Britain was standing alone against this Nazi threat, and that's what made the whole thing really very very moving and powerful for me. You know, at the time this book takes place, where I've set this book, is May 10, 1940, when Churchill became prime minister, to May 10, 1941, when this first major German air campaign essentially came to an end. That's the period where Britain faced truly an existential threat from Germany. Germany had overrun the Low Countries, had crushed France, and now suddenly the inconceivable had happened. And that was that Germany was able to base aircraft on the French coast, just minutes from England. And Churchill understood that if Germany were to actually attempt to invade England, and believe me, this seemed a certainty after France fell that this was going to happen. Churchill understood from the start something very, very important, which was that if indeed Germany was to try this invasion across the Channel, the first thing they would have to do is secure air superiority. Churchill understood that the only way to deny that air superiority was with fighter aircraft, you know, the classic Spitfires and Hurricanes that have become, you know, gone down in the war of aerial combat. He understood that he had to, Britain had to build an awful lot more of these aircraft and train a lot more pilots if they were to stave off this campaign. And that was sort of the brilliance. I mean, he wasn't a terrific strategist. He wasn't that great a tactician. But in this respect, he understood exactly what was necessary. He took really important steps to make sure that this happened.
Wow. Amazing, amazing content in The Splendid and the Vice. It is Eric Larson's latest offering to us. It's a brilliant read, and it's a book that you really need to have at the top of your reading stack. By all means, find out more about Eric at his website, Eric Larson Books. Eric, of course, is spelled with a K. Eric Larson Books. And quite honestly, because this is the way I like to roll, check with your local independent bookstore and just say, I want to get a copy of Eric Larson's The Splendid and the Vile, because that is a great way to support those independent bookstores. A lot of them are doing curbside service, so you can order it ahead and just roll by, pick it up, go home and start reading it. This is going to be a fascinating journey into these early stages of World War II in England. The Splendid and the Vile is the name of the book. It's a fantastic read, as I said. You do some things with weaving strong history and that kind of captured first-person narrative, like you say, the journaling kind of aspect, which gives that instant voice of the time that spans, you know, decades. You leap us right back in decades, and it's almost like if I could read and close my eyes at the same time, I could visualize what is happening. And that is what you find, those bits and pieces, and you blend them together into a book like The Splendid and the Vile.
Well, that's my goal. You know, as strange as it may seem, my goal is not really to it's not really to inform per se. I mean, if people learn something from my books, that's great. But really, my goal is to produce, if you will, a historical experience. Nonfiction, it's all true. Produce a nonfiction historical experience to which readers can fall and almost feel as though they are living through that period in real time as the events unfold, as if they did not know the ending. Now, of course, people do know the ending, but it's one of the beautiful things about reading is that you're able actually to suspend that knowledge in the course of a story like this. So I really love to weave. You know, you got to touch, of course, at least some of the major bases, so people get a sense of the landscape of that early period of World War II. But what I really like, the things that I love most, are the personal stories that I thread through the saga. For example, my favorite character in the book is Mary Churchill, who was Winston and Clementine's youngest living daughter. Mary was 17 in 1940 when Churchill became prime minister. She turns 18 in the course of the book, and she was a real charming character. I feel she kept her own daily diary. She was a very smart young woman, very acute observer of things around her. Really adored her father, and so she kept this daily diary of events with attention not just to all the big events and to the major threats at hand, but also to the life she was leading. You know, she was indeed a 17-year-old girl who loved to have fun, and she did. And so she tells us all about it, and, you know, periodic references to snogging in the hayloft with RAF pilots and going to dances and all that. And, you know, she just comes through as a very, very charming, charming character.
The predecessor of social media, I guess, because it's somewhat unfiltered, but that is there's a beautiful rarity about that. And there is where I marvel at what The Splendid and the Vile brings to us, the reader, the readers, as we get into it, is history often is like black and white line drawings. And what you have done is taken a vibrant palette of colors and just colored it in, given us a real sense and almost a smell and feel of what it was like. And That is why I'm having fun with this. And then every so often I catch myself kind of sitting back and just going, wow, and this is all real. And so
that's good. Well, I like your analogy about the line drawing versus, you know, applying a palette of color. I mean, that's kind of, I think I'll use that if you don't mind from now on.
Go right ahead.
Those are the things that I love, and all the vivid little details. You know, the thing is, when you look at the world through a particular lens, like you have a particular question you want to answer. In my case, you know, it was how on earth did they get through the day during this German air campaign? You look at things differently than how other scholars would. Like Martin Gilbert, you mentioned, you know, he's of course the great biographer of Churchill. He was after something very different than I. At points I'm sure we overlap, but he was after, you know, the great grand portrait of Winston Churchill. I was looking at, you know, again, how do these people get through the day? What's rationing like? Are the sewer lines at the Country Home Checkers going to be overloaded when they station 130 troops there to guard Churchill and all the little things, you know? So those are the things that really appeal to me, and those are things that thankfully other historians tend to not be interested in.
Well, you have given us a wonderful book to read again. What can I say? Eric Larson is my guest. Eric Larson Books is his website. ericlarsonbooks.com is his website. By all means, get your copy of The Splendid and the Vile, Eric Larson's latest offering to us. Ask your local independent bookseller for a copy. Patronize those people and let them get a book for you. They will do it. If they're sold out, they'll get a copy post-haste. I promise you that. And Eric, thank you again for just another fascinating read. This is a book I know that I'm going to be able to do like your other books, which is read it more than once, because each time I'm going to get something different. As I age, I find different perspectives. And this one is just, I am having fun. I haven't finished it yet, so don't tell me how the war ends, okay?
I'll do my best not to.
Thank you. Eric, thanks again for joining us here on the Culture Buzz. Thank you very much for The Splendid and the Vile. A great book, folks. Get your copy as soon as possible. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you.